Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Clean Energy View radio show. Our podcasts are available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.cleanenergyview.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at info@cleanenergyview.com.
Today, my guest is Jessica Kellner, and we're going to be talking about her book called Housing Reclaimed, Sustainable Homes for Next to Nothing. The do-it-yourself home renovation concept is a very popular trend, especially with the high cost of home renovation and also the need to live more sustainably. Providing that you have the expertise or have the proper instruction, it can also be very cost-effective as it is good for the environment. The financial costs associated with purchasing a new home has also forced people to go back to basics. Now, this does not mean that you have to go back to living in a cave or anything like that. People get such a vivid imagination when it comes to these types of concepts, and it's really very simple. We're going to find out a little later on. There are so many different options. Homeowners are looking at the comfort and personalization of the home as opposed to buying something that is simply, quote, bigger and better. And that's really important. Instead of spending a fortune on brand new materials, people are opting to use materials from old building, or as the term is called, deconstruction, as well as other materials, often headed for landfills. Now, by embracing such concepts such as straw bale building, at the community level, people can learn to work together within their own communities to create a more affordable housing as they develop a more tight-knit community. And that's really important because when you have a tighter-knit community, one of the key benefits that most people fail to recognize is the fact that the tighter the community, the less crime. Because you have everybody basically looking out for one another, and it's a really nice environment to live in. There are a lot of questions that we've been getting in as far as how does one even begin such an endeavor. So we're going to be talking about the actual building basics that you need to know and how people can go about collecting reclaimed materials to use to actually build a house or even renovate. And one of the big questions is, why is insulation and thermal mass so important? What options are there for utilizing space as well as for creating space? This is a concept that seems complicated, but it's really not when you think about it. And also, how can you incorporate the natural color of the materials to enhance the actual beauty of your home? How can you create a landscape that also lends itself to sustainability? Now, my guest today is not only the author of the book, but she's also the editor of Natural Home and Garden magazine. And you can visit their website at naturalhomeandgarden.com. And she is very passionate about using architectural salvage to create aesthetically beautiful, low-cost housing. She writes and speaks about a practical, easy, and inexpensive solution for healthier and more environmentally sound homes and lifestyles with an emphasis on the values of recycling and using reclaimed materials. So I would like to welcome to the show Jessica Kellner. Good afternoon, Jessica, and welcome to the show.
Hi, June. Thank you.
Now, Jessica, there are so many things to talk about. I hope we can get everything crammed in within this hour segment. We've had so many questions. Facebook and Twitter and social media has just been tremendous. But what got you involved with just talking about this whole subject?
Well, it was kind of after, you know, all the news really broke about how bad the housing crisis was, and The Economist called it the housing crisis of 2006 to 2008, but it was more around 2008 to 2009 that most of us were really starting to understand sort of how big this problem was and how much housing prices had been artificially inflated by the market, much beyond their actual value in materials. The market had led to a situation where it seemed as if it were better for everyone for housing prices to be going up, 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 and up. And then what we saw was the bottom dropped out, and it turned out, you know, it destroyed many people's lives, either financially or losing their home. And so after that happened, I had worked for the magazine Natural Home and Garden for many years, and I had seen several examples of people who had used reclaimed materials to build houses, whether it be on an individual level where this was an actual person or family who was going out collecting materials and building a home, or more of an organized structure. Some of the groups in my book are doing this for whole communities. And it struck me as just an interesting sort of paradox that we had all of these people in need of housing at this point, and all of this housing that had, you know, gone up and up and in price, and people taking out exorbitant mortgages that they couldn't afford. And at the same time, we have all of these this huge quantity of materials that's just going straight to the landfill. And that, you know, uniting those two things, showing people how those materials could be reused could sort of help reduce waste as well as be at least part of a solution for this big housing crisis that we were having. So that's what sort of caused me to have the idea and want to put this book out.
And I'm just curious, how much of your own home has been, I guess, reconstructed through these types of materials?
Well, I actually just moved into my first home a few months ago, this past summer, and it was right after... Oh, thanks. It was right after I had finished work on the book, and my husband and I actually had been talking about, you know, should we look for some land and try to do this? And then we landed upon this really amazing house that has a lot of green structures, and the former owner actually completely rehabbed a house that was on the property, and it's still a fairly small house. He did a fairly small remodel, and he did reuse a lot of the materials. So I haven't actually built a house in this method, but I do really want to do some of the ideas in the book, such as building an outbuilding out of an old grain silo or shipping pallets. You can put two together and make a second building or a guest house if you need the extra space, but you don't want to have to pay to condition it year-round and that kind of thing. So, yeah, my house has been definitely rehabbed and used a lot of reclaimed materials before I ever got to it, which is really fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds amazing that you were able to have that kind of luck. I mean,
it was amazing luck.
It's just interesting when you're looking at different homes. I mean, people starting to pay attention to the structures and exactly what renovation is going to cost them in years to come, and that's a very big subject, especially if you're looking at some of these structures where the materials that were used are not very or were not very durable, mm-hmm. and are also materials that are not very friendly to the environment.
Right.
No.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I know people are considering, and this, you know, reclaimed salvage materials can definitely play into that. That was what I wanted to sort of present in the book, was two sides of this concept. One is an individual who is, like I said, collecting items. The other side of it is a more of an organizational sort of industry-wide approach, where we need to be looking to deconstruction over demolition. You know, at this time, almost all houses that are going to be taken down are completely bulldozed, everything sent straight to the landfill, no consideration even for the easiest to salvage things to come out of that house. It's not encouraged, sometimes not even allowed for that to happen. And so that's something that needs to happen in the building and deconstruction industry as a change, in addition to people actually going out and collecting this stuff and using that in their own homes, which is sort of another component of the book.
Now, what's interesting is that you look at some major natural disasters that have occurred here, and I'm sure that this definitely happened in the South after Hurricane Katrina, where some of the materials were just, they couldn't use them because of mold or whatnot. But I do know that when there was a nor'easter, not the recent nor'easter that hit New York, but there was actually it was a storm that hit last spring that hit the New York area, and I remember the trees just uprooted, these gigantic trees. And what had happened was some of these trees landed on houses, basically, you know, demolishing the house. And what you're describing is basically what took place. You saw these bulldozers come in maybe a week or two later and just completely wipe out everything. And
right.
It's interesting that there are a lot of materials that can be reused. I know in other parts where people are renovating their house, for example, one material that is commonly recycled is bricks. mean, I have, my garden is actually lined with bricks that are from so many different houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically people put ads out in the newspaper or Craigslist, what have you, and will say, you know, if anybody wants bricks, you know, let me know. And,
exactly.
And that's something that I think is tremendous, because, I mean, you could go to all the different home renovation stores and buy them brand new, but why? Why
exactly.
bother? Especially if you can get something that is going to basically wind up in the landfill, and it's something that you could use for a decorative measure as well as just for landscape structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the biggest threads that tied all of the stories in the book, and this is from individuals, you know, in the book there's three sort of families and individuals that I profile who built their own house with no construction loan, and they did it themselves. They collected the materials themselves. They went out in their community and got the word out that they wanted this stuff, and the things started pouring in, all the way to the more organizational approach where there's people who are doing this within their community. Either way, they say once you start getting that word out, once you start letting people know that you want this stuff before it goes to the landfill, it's not hard to accumulate. If anything, they got way more than they needed. You know, the one couple, they were a newlywed couple in Idaho, and they built their house out of almost all reclaimed materials. They said 5 years later, they were still getting people in the construction and deconstruction and industry in their area calling and saying, hey, we have these amazing cabinets. Do you guys want them? Could you use them? Do you know anyone that wants them? Because they're going to go to the landfill. And that doesn't make anyone feel good. It doesn't make anyone feel happy to think about perfectly good things going to the landfill. You know, everyone has sort of this natural, I think, aversion to that idea of I'm going to just take this perfectly good thing and throw it away for no reason. But in the most cases, there's nowhere else for that stuff to go. There's nowhere else, you know, unless these deconstruction people wanted to have their own eBay business selling it, which they don't. They don't have another alternative. And as soon as they start to find out, oh, there's someone in my community who wants to collect this stuff, there's somewhere else I could take this, bam, it starts coming in and rolling in. You know, Dan Phillips, he's the one who is in charge of the Phoenix Commotion in Texas, which is an amazing organization. They're building these unbelievably amazing houses all over their town. They've transformed whole neighborhoods, and it's all using reclaimed materials. And he says, the first thing that you need to do if you want to take on a project like this is get a shed, because once you get your word out there, the stuff is going to start pouring in and you need a place to put it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting. When 9/11 hit, I remember all over the news they were pleased for any type of construction companies to come in to haul away all of the materials. And if you think about it, you know, the buildings that came down, there was a lot of marble. There was a lot of really valuable materials that were basically up for grabs.
Right.
And it's amazing. I mean, it's a very expensive process because you need to pay for the labor. Then if there's any type of cleanup involved with the materials, I don't know what the process is or how they go about doing it, but I'm sure that they had to make sure that the materials were safe to handle, especially with all the different toxic chemicals that were, you know, in the
mm-hmm.
environment itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing when you think about I would have to say that it was in the millions of dollars with all the materials that were just basically up for grabs. And you know, when you think about where those materials probably are at this point, it's really interesting. And that's true with basically any major building where they're looking to get rid of some of the materials because they're still good, and there's no reason why they need to just be the building needs to be just completely demolished and then hauled off to the landfills. It's such an expense to do that as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, using these materials, like I said, everyone in this book is making these homes with no construction loan. They're doing it, gathering the materials. As you mentioned, a lot of community building goes on with this. People, you know, the family that I feature who's in Colorado, they built a home that was a straw bale home that's, aside from the straw bale, almost entirely reclaimed materials in terms of the interior. And they had big parties all of their friends would come, they would help them, and then in turn they would help them, you know, build a straw bale house, or, okay, they've learned how to do straw bale and now maybe they're going to use it in the future. And it was a way for them to meet people in their community. It was a way for them to participate in educating people in their community. As they also had been educated before they started their home, they went to another person's home and worked on a work party with them to learn how to do it. And so it's really interesting, and it's really kind of a grassroots thing when you're going from house to house and helping each other. You know, it has that barn-raising quality, and it's really amazing when you read the stories of these people and how their houses connected them, not just with them with each other, but also with their entire region in terms of both their community as well as, like, their architectural history. You know, these houses now have bits, kind of like you were saying, you know, things that come out of certain buildings. All the parts of these houses have some kind of background. They have a history that they're bringing into your home that makes your home a much richer environment than just, you know, a thrown-up, quick, toxic, white, you know, walls that have drywall from China. It's a totally different experience to be in a house that has all of these old materials and all these materials that come with their own kind of set of personal history.
Well, it's kind of, it's almost the way that things were done, not only when the pioneers were settling the land. I mean, that was a community-based effort, but also if you think about it, the way that even, for example, here in New York, I know some of the old families, you'll see some of the marble that was basically brought over on a ship from Europe over here, and you'll hear some of the older families talk about different parts of the house, how this was brought over from Europe or that was brought over from Europe. Actually, it's funny. A friend of mine was telling me a story about how his grandfather brought over, it was either his grandfather or his father brought over a fig tree from Italy. Mm-hmm. And that was a big centerpiece in his yard. And it's just kind of interesting how you have little bits and pieces from the other people's homes, you know, relatives and whatnot, and they'll take certain things, whether it's a stained glass window or a fixture or just even some of the wood from a barn, and then they'll use it to build, you know, another part of the house. But it's just the sentimental value that comes with those materials that really gives, I think, an additional value, because it's all part of the story and the history and so on and so forth, and it just really lends itself, you know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I just want to ask you really quickly, because we actually have a caller that's been patiently on hold.
Oh.
Can you talk about briefly what the process is, what straw bale building actually is?
Sure, absolutely. Straw bale is essentially bales of straw, and they are stacked within, generally you have kind of a framework that you use, and you stack them, they're 4 feet across, and so you stack them in rows, and then you cover it with a mud, essentially. It's, you can make it out of many things, but it usually has some clay, some soil, some water, and then usually like some straw or some other material that's native to the area that helps kind of bind everything together. If you want a recipe to actually make your own, we do have one online at naturalhomeandgarden.com. Otherwise, there's a lot of online, you'll find many different recipes for how to kind of make it. And from what most people have told me, it's a very kind of intuitive, you make it to the thickness that you think will work, and then you start experimenting with it, and you want to sort of do a test area and let it dry, and then once you feel that you have that right consistency, then you can go forward with the whole wall. And the nice thing about it is it's very hands-on. It's completely non-toxic, so anyone can do this. You can have young children, you can have, you know, elderly people. You can dig right in with your hands. You don't have to worry about gloves or breathing masks or anything like that. And it's highly insulative. Because the walls are really thick, it helps hold in heat. It's also really healthy for indoor air quality, because the straw bales and the clay walls can breathe, and so it allows moisture to move in and out of the house rather than being stuck inside where it can cause mold. It's a very natural sort of process where that moisture can be released easily without getting stuck in. And it is just a very healthy, very sort of natural feeling in a straw bale house. And yeah, that's pretty much the basics. It's actually very simple, and it's very user-friendly and very hands-on.
Thank you, Jessica. And we're going to talk more in a bit about more of the basic types of building that our people need to consider. But we do have someone that's been patiently on hold. So caller from the area code 870, do you have a question for Jessica?
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon, Jessica. Calling from around the Mississippi Delta area. And
hello.
Mainly just wanted, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. More on the, artistic side of reclaiming the materials. I've got a studio where I tear down and demolish the old dance halls and clubs and things I find just strictly to reclaim the materials and use them in artwork. My studio itself is furnished with, I built all the benches and tables and also put the old metal from the roof of the buildings on the wall, is siding on the walls. So try to reclaim, you'll give it the character to give these materials a new life.
Mm-hmm.
And then also have a little bit of historic significance, like you mentioned, using the details from an older structure. You can get something, the piece of history that can live on and inspire people to maybe, they weren't able to go into that original building, but maybe a piece of that can draw their imagination to where, they could inspire them to create something along the same lines.
Yeah. It's interesting. When you look at some of the mansions around the country, I know here in New York, some of the old estates, you'll find that that's very common to see different materials being used on other properties. It's just amazing. Also, I just wanted to make one brief comment. What you do is, from what it sounds like you're doing, it kind of reminds me, there's a popular show called Restaurant Impossible. And it's kind of neat because they basically take this restaurant, they rip it down, and they try to renovate it as much as possible with a minimal budget. And I think that, this is obviously a concept that many people, including business owners, are really paying attention to. And I think the work that you're doing, especially with taking these materials from these clubs and whatnot, I think that's fantastic. Because if you look at the cost for building a brand new facility, I'm just curious, what would a brand new facility cost in today's world?
Oh, my. You're looking, anywhere from $40 to $100 a square foot versus just your elbow grease and the, little bit of, you can have the work of restoring and pulling nails, and sometimes you'll have to, reduce the thickness and things to make it more uniform, especially you get 100-year-old timbers. They weren't interested in back then and having nice, clean, easy, uniform pieces from the sawmill.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I really liked one of the things that one of the homeowners said, Aaron Powers. He's the guy that built with his wife their little home in Idaho, and he said, well, it's kind of a trade-off for the resources that we did have for the resources we didn't have. Building with reclaimed materials definitely took more time and more energy on our part. We had to go out. We had to seek out these materials. We had to find them. We had to haul them back. We had to generally process them in some way, like you're saying, remove nails, maybe sand them down, whatever processing goes into them. And he's like, so all of that, of course, was consuming of our time and our energy. But we're young people. We have a lot of energy. We were willing to sacrifice our time. We didn't have money. So he's like, it's sort of
a trade-off.
If we went out and bought all this stuff, it would have cost us a lot more of a resource that we didn't have. So instead we used what we did have, and we created a really amazing home that we love more than something that we probably could have paid more money for. But, yes, I mean, there is a time investment. There is a labor investment that you can't just, have an amazing house built out of reclaimed materials. Well, I suppose you could have it done for you, but then it's going to cost you a lot of money. So it is definitely a trade-off, but I think it's valuable because you end up with a home that means a lot more to you. in a home that, as we've said, the materials inside actually have sort of their own history and their own meaning, and so it's kind of a twofold payoff.
Oh, I agree.
Oh, yeah, and this is Tim, correct?
Yes, it is. It I call it, when I'm out there raising an old building or a barn or something, I call it dancing with the scars. You kind of dance around, get out of the way of wasps and spiders and nails and things, but the rewards are well worth it. I mean, you've got mm-hmm. something that here's a historic piece, or maybe like Elvis Presley played in some of the places that I've taken down.
Cool.
You just can't find any kind of history like that in a brand new sterile metal building.
Exactly. One of the other gentlemen, Guy Baker, he's the father of a family who built their home in Wedowee, Alabama, and he talks about that the value inherent in it and the quality. He says, you know, I would go work in a house that was 100 years old, and I'm taking it down, and the wood is in solid condition. It doesn't have damage. It doesn't have termite damage. It's really hot, you know, solid, high-quality wood. And then he's like, I would go work on something that was, you know, 10 or 15 years old, and the things would be much farther deteriorated than this 100-year-old wood that I had found in another building. And so it's another thing of just the quality and the sort of heft and strength and durability of the materials that were used back then are different than the materials used now. You know, they were old-growth forest, which we try to protect now. And so it just had a different sort of caliber in terms of lasting and being able to be reused compared with the things we use today for the most part.
No, I completely agree. I think the fact that our forests have been subjected to so many chemicals and all sorts of stuff, that it makes its impact on the quality of the wood that you're now able to get. And the wood back then, it was free from all this industrial pollution. And, you know, let's face it, just because pollution takes place in one part of the state doesn't mean that it's not going to affect, a forest that might be located in another. I mean, air does travel. And it's just kind of interesting, just listening to the two of you talk, it reminds me of basically the old farmer's mentality. Because basically when you live in a farm, which I grew up on a farm, you learn to use different materials that normally people just would not think to use. You just learn how to be very resourceful, and you'll basically transform one material into something basically out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
Tim, I'm just curious, with the businesses that you've done this for, do you see more business owners, when they're looking to renovate their businesses, do you see them looking to do this as opposed to just building from scratch with all brand new stuff?
Oh, absolutely. It's getting more difficult for me to find good choice materials anymore, as a matter of fact. It's actually, there's so much more of this interest out there that as more and more people are doing so, that just it makes it more difficult to find.
I know, we should not tell anybody about this, right?
We did the best. My oldest girl is an artist. She makes prints, and so we'll use every bit of it we can, especially like the old cypress timbers and things. And she will take and cut the blocks, do reduction print, fine art from them too. So I mean, it's something that we even use those little odds and ends pieces that can't be used for structure or for furniture. You know, not large enough for.
Mm-hmm.
Other purposes.
And that's basically repurposing these scrap materials to enhance the beauty, which is also something that is discussed in the book. And, you know, it's just a great thing that you're doing. You're taking advantage, Tim, of all these different materials and just really using everything that's available to you. If you could, share with our audience the name of your business.
Well, I have a company. I do actually, I'm a photographer, but my studio is called the Delta 9 Studio, and it's on along the Rock and Roll Highway, Highway 67 in northeast Arkansas,